Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 390.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we ring in the new year with goals. It's like champagne followed by administrative list making. What a normal combination of events. Today, we'll talk about how to make good resolutions that you'll actually keep. We'll also look back at 2023 globally, because turns out it was a pretty great year for humanity, but we'll see if our cynicism can accept that. And finally, we'll look at the cultural slush pile to figure out why feet have become such a thing. Yes, feet. And we'll look at some of the biggest cultural moments of 2023. Today, I'm joined by, oh my gosh, first of all, this is one of those Nagin and her buddies episodes where I could just sit back. We're joined by this wonderful comedian. He's got 5 albums on iTunes. This man is extraordinarily prolific. He's actually, I don't know if you realize this, Christian, one of the first comedians I ever met in New York City when I first moved here. He also has an album, a special right now that you can watch on Amazon. It's called Show Your Work. It's called Show Your Work Now? Show Your Work. Yeah. Sorry. Show Your Work Now on Amazon is the note I had written, but I put it all, blended it all. Show Your Work. And and he's got a newsletter that I know people, so there's some Fake the Nationers that swear by the newsletter. It's called New Music for Olds. It is the wonderful Christian Finnegan. Hey, Christian, Happy New Year.
Oh, Nagin, what a pleasure to see you after all this time. Thank you. Welcome to bring in my 2024 with you.
Today he's looking like some sort of a beat poet, in like a dark, like a sort of beatnik cafe from the 1960s. It's a really nice look.
Yeah, I'm in a podcast booth here at QED Astoria, yeah. my wife's venue, and the blackness of the wall tiles really offsets the whiteness of my face.
Yes,
in a way,
really. It really does. This is when we could really see your skin color. We are also joined by just a tremendous, tremendous comedian who's one of the first comedians I ever directed in a thing 100 million years ago. She is author of the book, Yes, I Can Say That. She's host of the podcast, Kill Me Now. She's just, she performs all over. You've probably seen her on just a million things on TV all the time. She'll pop up everywhere because she is that adored by me and everyone. It is the excellent Judy Gold.
Thank you, Nagin. It's so great to be here. I love Christian. He's such a great guy. And this is my first gig of 2024.
Oh.
And I'm happy to be here. Very happy to be here.
I'm so honored, guys.
Big fan of both of you.
I had a bunch of other gigs and I canceled them.
Shut up, Christian. Is that true?
As far as you know.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, say it.
See,
at least
I'm honest.
Claim it. You know, claim
all
it.
All guy comedians are the same. Okay.
We're all liars.
Well, before we get into it, I just want to remind listeners that it's a new year and maybe it's time for a new Patreon subscription. For as little as $4 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of the show, and there are more tiers beyond that. Today, I'm actually releasing an episode with Marcella Arguello and Joey Clift where we figure out what to do with relatives at a family event who can't handle their booze. It is so fun. They both have experience with this, and you definitely need to check it out. So go to patreon.com/NaginFarsad to support the show, get your bonus episodes, and join in on the fun. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. Okay, so with every new year comes new goals. Sometimes they're pipe dreams, sometimes they're realistic. All the time they have something to do with exercise. We read a piece in the Washington Post that talked about the reality of New Year's resolutions because according to surveys, 4 in 10 American adults made New Year's resolutions. And here's what I thought was interesting. 16% kept all of their resolutions and about 44% kept at least some, but on not all of them by the end of the year. So if you're down on resolutions, this is actually good news because it means nearly 2 out of 3 people achieved some kind of success because of a resolution. So I guess my just opening question for the two of you is, what are your feelings about New Year's resolutions? Have either of you had success with them over the years?
First of all, what were these people with multiple New Year's resolutions? Like, pick one. Like, well, who puts that much pressure on themselves? I feel like that, you know, it's a marker. Okay, you know, they'd say everything that's like new year. So it's like, we're going to do new things. I always pick something that I'm like, I have to stop doing. Like for the whole year, I'm like, you're an idiot. Stop it. So yeah, so I've picked one.
Can you share it?
Because that's all I can handle. I got to get off the fucking phone. I can't stand being, I literally... Like, I have really bad ADHD. So I'll go in for a specific reason, like to read an article. And then then an hour and a half later, I'm watching cooking videos on Instagram. No, this is a waste of my life. And when you get to be my age, you're like, oh, I only have 20 years left. So I don't want
to waste it. Christian, what's your relationship with New Year's resolutions?
Well, I mean, I agree with Judy. I think that's the one that everyone has. I mean, the problem is that the way the world has gone, everything is funneled through either your phone or your laptop. And so even the practical necessary things you have to do are on the same device as the thing that kills your time. You know what I mean? And so that's obviously a big one for me. I think that, you know, I used to get really down on myself because my New Year's resolutions wouldn't last more than, say, into early March or whatever. Now I've kind of come to the conclusion that, fine, great. So I had 2 months. 2 months of trying hard.
Yeah.
You know, that's better than no months. And I think if nothing else, thinking about your New Year's resolutions is kind of a nice opportunity to just sort of analyze, well, what is important to me? Like, what are my goals? And even if I don't fulfill them, even if I don't do them, it's nice to just sort of take a little inventory and be like, all right, what is actually important to me this year? And it's not necessarily the same things that are important to me last year, you know? That's what I'm trying to tell myself. I won't do any of them, but I have thought about it.
I do want to add that I didn't mean generalized use of my phone. I meant the wasting of the time. Like to Lisa, we had friends over. I made dinner. I was like, hide my phone. I don't want to even know where it is. Yeah. And then
I had to
look up a recipe. Yes. I didn't even know where it was. So I just took up my laptop and I looked up the recipe, but that was it. I didn't use it. But I also have to say, as a Jew, you know, we have Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which is the Jewish New Year. And a lot of that processing of what did I do last year? Yeah. How do I want to change? Like, we spend a lot of time really thinking about the changes we want to make. So I kind of think of that as my real New Year, you know, because I put so much thought into it.
I have a similar relationship with Persian New Year, which is the first day of spring, but I do both.
Oh, that's like a great New Year.
It's a great New Year because it's like a start of all the things are blooming. It's lovely. But like, I do both because then it's like I have one start now and then I have another start.
Oh, yeah. Yours is like, in March.
You know what I mean? So it's like if my thing only lasts 3 months, then that's cool. Like, it's because I have another one. By the way, so one of the things that the article talks about is kind of like keep your goals realistic. And when Judy said, who are these people with multiple goals? I'm just going to show you guys. This is great podcasting because I'm going to show you something visual, which is this is my list of goals.
No way.
If you guys could see the adorable little artistic flourishes.
I did an adorable because my daughter was drawing and I sat next to her and drew New Year's goals in crayon and like little flourishes next to it. So stupid.
But I saw singing on there. What is that about?
Oh, hey, I didn't think it would like focus that quickly on the words. How embarrassing. Singing. Yeah, that's probably the most realistic goal that's on here. Because I just want to strengthen my vocal cords just because I love singing. So I should just do it more. Like if you sing every day for 10 minutes, it'll strengthen your vocal vocal cord muscles.
Right.
But also I've noticed that like after an hour of stand up, my voice is so tired and I don't feel like I should live that way.
That was my last year.
You've got to do vocal exercises.
I had vocal cord surgery like 5 years ago. I had a vocal
cord. Did you really?
Yeah. And that really, and I couldn't talk for like 6 weeks and all that.
Oh God, forget it.
Nightmare.
And that really did remind me of how much I missed singing. Like, you know, because I was in chorus and all that. And there was a barbershop quartet in high school and all that crap. And so I actually joined a choir last year. I am in the Astoria choir.
Oh my God. I love that. See, that's kind of like my ultimate goal is to join some sort of not important to me. Like, I'm not saying it's not important. It's like not important. It's not a career goal for me
to be
in a choir.
It's clean. It's separate from your professional life.
Like, I just want to join something where I sing for fun. And it's not about achieving it and like winning it and fucking making money at it. Like, it's not about any of that. So that is one of my goals. But what I'm doing wrong, guys, is that I have some of these are just kind of to-do list things, honestly. But some of them are just like, why do I have so many goals? But I'm also that kind of person and I'm annoying. I said too many goals. Here's one thing that I thought was interesting about the list that I wonder if you guys have ever done this. The experts say that you should set your New Year's resolutions at the right time. So if it is about exercise, you need to set the resolution when you're like short of breath and sweaty. So that,
that was interesting.
Yeah
because you need to like reduce the empathy gap between your present self and the self that will be accomplishing those goals. So if you can't pick, like if your goal is to finish writing a novel or whatever, you should literally be doing it and then be like, what can I legitimately achieve in the new year? Is it one page a day or whatever?
Right.
And that's when you set the goal so that you can really feel what it's like to do it.
Yeah, I definitely go in that stupid vortex of, and I wonder what, and what about this one? And then it's like, oh my God, this is such a waste of time.
Yeah.
Such a waste. I'm sick of wasting my time.
Well, the other thing is coupling your goal with something you'll enjoy.
Right.
Have you guys ever done that?
No,
oh, you mean like, yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like save a certain TV show to only watch on the treadmill or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
Like
a podcast that you only allow yourself to listen to at the gym or something like
that. Yes, they call it temptation bundling.
Yeah, I do that.
I've never done that. No, I basically do all of my goals wrong is how what I've learned from this list from the experts.
Well, you've done very well in life, Nagin.
So I'm doing some things right.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I want to tell you, Judy, there's one thing that my friend is doing and I wonder, and then one thing my parents are doing that I wonder if they're helpful to you in your phone issue, which we all have a phone issue. I also have a phone issue. It's just not on my list next to singing, which is my friend gets the newspaper in paper and she's like 35 years old.
I
it's
do
not
too.
Like,
yeah.
So she doesn't use her phone for news, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be costly, but also.
No, I get the newspaper. I get some magazines.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's brilliant because I think that's my issue is like, I go to my phone to check the news and I have to know the news, you know?
But can I constantly refresh a newspaper to see if the Epson client list has dropped yet? I need to be able to constantly pick up a new newspaper. Is it there yet?
Do you need to know? Do you really need to know?
Does it
affect your life in many ways?
I didn't think I needed to know. And yet I probably have refreshed Twitter. Always Twitter. Never X. Always Twitter.
I
probably refreshed Twitter 30 times in the past 36 hours trying to see.
Wow.
I don't know why.
I wonder what comedians are on there.
That's what I'm hoping. Just one person, one comedian.
Right. One of my goals in 2024 is to never refer to it by Elon Musk's preferred name.
Yeah.
The other thing that my parents do, which is so simple, and I think a lot of people probably do this, but you know, I just really noticed it this time around visiting them as I'm here in California, is they have an old phone that they don't use anymore that plays all of their music.
Mm.
And so instead of going to their, because this is the derailment happens when you go to your phone and you're like, I'm here merely to put on a playlist, but there's 15 text messages and da 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 da. So then you get caught in, you know, you get sidetracked. But my parents just have a separate phone that like that plays
you
their music.
You know what's interesting, Nagin? When you said that, I actually pictured a rotary phone on the wall that they took the hook. And I was like, what is she talking about? That is how old I am. I thought it was a real, like a landline phone.
You know how in old timey we used to play music off of rotary phones.
Yeah, you hold the receiver up to the stereo.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Okay, well, folks, hit me up. Are you achieving your goals properly? Are you temptation bundling? Are you having a reasonable number of goals? Are you setting your goals at the right time to reduce the empathy gap? I'm so curious. Share your goals with me. And is singing one of them? Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions, it monitors your spending, it helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. Okay, so I got this idea because we wrote a piece from Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times. And he basically made the case that despite some of the incredibly awful realities of 2023, like the wars in Ukraine and Gaza and less remembered Yemen, and despite the fact that Trump is ridiculously in the lead for the GOP primaries, and despite the fact that there is a really questionable resurgence in Y2K fashion, 2023 is actually among the best for humanity. And he points out that global child mortality has dropped to its lowest point at just 3.6% of newborns dying by the age of five. It used to be like orders of magnitude larger than that. And just over the decades, it's consistently dropped. Extreme poverty has reached a record low, affecting just a bit more than 8% of humans worldwide. 100,000 people are now emerging from extreme poverty every day. And he sort of gives us this like really incredible list of great things that are happening. I mean, there's more, like the eradication of polio and Guinea worm disease is almost totally happened. Blinding trachoma is also on its way out in several countries. So there's just like this list of like things that happened in 2023 that make it actually a great year for humanity. And he writes in it that he writes a column like this almost every year. And he gets a lot of backlash because people, quote, believe it is offensive to hail progress when so many are dying unnecessarily from wars and disease. So my question to the two of you is, are you offended like many of his readers? Do you think there's a place for this kind of like look back?
Offended?
What? Well, that's what he claims his readers.
These people, first of all, everyone is so me. Like, look, I know this is going to come to a shock. I'm not the most positive person in the entire world.
Yes, you, Judy?
Yes, but, you know, look, I'm not going around like, oh, God, I'm in chronic pain because of my knee. And there's, you know, like anti-Semitism and the war and Ukraine, like I'm not then saying in my head, but you know, the Jimmy Carter disease, I just don't go there. I mean, like, I'm glad he goes there.
Peanut
Thank
allergies?
You for letting us know, huh?
He said Jimmy Carter disease, and I said peanut allergies.
Oh, he's the one
Guinea worm disease.
He's the one who
figuring it out. Yeah.
I just, like, I think it's great that he does that, and because I think the more we know, the more we know. But I don't think people process it. It's like, you know, but everything else sucks. And he's just saying, but FYI. You know, and it's okay. It doesn't make me feel bad. I mean, it's like great for those people that it affects, you know, but
I don't know if the word
I'm an American and it's all about me.
I don't know if offended is the right word.
Yeah.
I do kind of, I don't know, I take a bit of a jaundiced eye at articles like this because it's like, on the one hand, it's like, yeah, things are fine for you, dude.
You know
what I mean? That it's like, you're doing great. And the thing is, all the things he's talking about, they're real. I don't, you know, don't discount them. But they aren't things that we interact with on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
It's not like, oh, man, hey, did you guys check out the child mortality today? It's way down. You know, like it's the Dow or something. You know,
But why isn't that as important as the Dow?
Well, because... Well, I mean, the Dow is obviously not super important to me either. But to be perfectly frank, this may shock you, but I'm not a huge investor in the stock market. But I'm just saying the things that are tough about 2023 and the things that are tough about this era in general are the things that we interact with on a day-to-day basis. You know, the price of food, you know, online, you know, racism and anti-Semitism and Islamophobia and all these things are tactile and real, and we encounter them on a day-to-day basis, all of the things, all the positive trends he's citing, which again, I don't doubt that they're real, aren't really things that we can do anything with. It doesn't change my day.
And another one that wasn't even in his article that I just happened to notice is that homicides are in crime in general are extremely down. There's been a sharp decline. Yeah. In all the crimes that
Well, it's hard to notice the absence of something.
Right.
But like, why? So this is the thing of like discounting the positive. Like, why? Why discount the positive?
But that's like, great. It's a positive that's like, okay.
That's, what I mean, it's like, but
know,
doesn't
but
it?
He sounds.
But the
know,
same
like
thing, the
pompous.
Same fears that get people to, you know, to post a video of, you know, I don't know, something negative that happened with, you know, something got stolen or whatever, and they post a video and then it goes viral and then everyone thinks that thing, there's theft everywhere or whatever. Yeah. Shouldn't the same thing be true on the other side of like, hey, here's a positive piece of information?
Well, but again, though,
And let's say that goes viral and then everyone's like, oh, there, crime is down. I psychically feel better about my community because I know there's less crime.
Right, but what I was saying though is like you can't really appreciate the absence of something. You know, you can only appreciate when things happen, not when things don't happen. You know, it's like those stupid when Bush was president and he gave everybody those tax rebates, like he got so much credit and he got so much goodwill from that just because it was like, oh my God, I'm getting something.
Getting something.
You know what I mean?
Which is similar to like the pandemic checks. That was like a tangible thing. Okay, well now this is a piece of reading that I did not share with you guys because I just wanted to get your fresh feelings about it. Now, I heard an interview with a wonderful writer, Amanda Ripley. She has a Substack and she had a piece in her Substack called How to Survive 2024. So I'm imagining that the three of us might have some anxiety going into 2024 because it's an election year. Am I correct in thinking that?
No, not at all.
I don't trust anyone who's looking forward to 2024.
I know.
Just in principle. Okay. If you're like, oh my God, I'm so excited about 2024.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm looking forward to getting the election over with, but like, you know, okay. So she knows that this anxiety is a national reality. And she covered the upheavals in Venezuela. And she met a bunch of journalists who were dealt with a lot of similar things that are happening, that have happened here with a lot of polarization, like a shit ton of polarization in Venezuela, even worse, whatever. So she interviewed these Venezuelan journalists, or like this one Venezuelan journalist to say, how did you survive all of that? Because it seemed miserable and we're going into an election year that everyone is dreading. And what do you suggest? And so through her work, she determined kind of three main things. One is don't let yourself be hijacked by the polarization because it'll make you crazy. So that's thing number one, like recognize that there is polarization, but don't get wound up in it. Don't start making constant arguments about it. Don't basically rile yourself up about the polarization on the side that you're on even. You know what I mean? Do you find yourselves doing that in general? Because I have, definitely. In 2020, that's all I, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard, especially when you know that the people that you would be arguing with aren't going to be arguing in good faith. And it's not, you know, that honestly, just getting into the fight is letting them win in some way. You know what I mean? And when I say them, I'm that's a broad brush.
Right.
But I'm saying it's hard because it's like you don't want to just sit back and take it, and you don't want to be passive, and you want to be proactive and fight for what you believe in. But so often with these people, the argument is the point. You know, the sort of dragging you into the mud and turning everything into just this, you know, who can be more aggressive, you know, that's sort of the strategy. And so I haven't really figured out how I'm going to navigate that yet. It's like, I've pretty much reacted so far by kind of receding in, you know, it's in my career, in my life in general, like as a comedian, it's been kind of hard for me because I've kind of come to the conclusion that there's just a lot of people I don't want to perform for.
It makes it really hard to do the road, in addition to other things.
Yeah. But it's like, nah, I don't. I remember the week, the New Year's Eve after Trump won, I headlined the Tampa Improv New Year's Eve weekend.
Oh God, and kill me. That is just already.
Yeah, but I just thought, just, and I looked out in the crowd. Statement. I was like, I fucking hate these people. Not all of them, but
right,
a lot of
right,
them.
Right.
I can't stand them.
Oh, please.
And it's like, what am I going to do? This is my career to try to entertain these people, and I don't want to. And it's been.
You know, I have to say.
No, I'm just saying, it's been 8 years, and I still haven't figured out the answer to that.
Well, one thing I'll say is I performed in South Carolina, in Columbia, South Carolina, the week after Trump was elected. And they there was like extra security there because they were worried about me being there and like riling people up or whatever. And it went over great and it was awesome. Anyways,
well, you were probably
just,
playing
as a
like
counter,
a cool indie place, weren't you? You weren't playing like...
Yeah, it was a big theater. I mean, it was like a, you know, it was like a 400-seat theater. I mean, I don't know who those people were.
Yeah, but people were there to see you.
Yeah.
People were there to see me.
It's different than people
difference.
Showing up to Ybor City.
No, and I mean, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. But I was in an extremely red state is my point. Okay,
of course.
Judy.
Yeah, but there's blueberries in the red states. But
true.
There's also, you know, I remember... You know, in the 80s, the 90s, like when I was out, I came out on stage in 96, and there were audiences, and I'm telling my life, you know, I'm talking about being a gay parent or whatever, you know, and I had the same thing Christian was saying. It's like, you deserve this. You don't, you know, you are, I remember when I first came out, because I had started in all the straight clubs. I had already been in, you know, in the mainstream clubs, and then I'm out in these mainstream clubs and people are walking out or making comments and stuff. And so I get it. It's like you get to a point where like, you know what? If you're going to have all these preconceived notions, if you already have your mind made up, like you can't being in front of an audience that already has their mind made up and you know that you don't agree with anything, you know, it's just, it's really, really hard when you're fighting that. I mean, it's, I've had, the only time I ever walked off stage in 42 years was right before Trump was elected. And I did a joke about Trump and they all started yelling, go Trump, you know? And I'm like, I'm doing a joke about how he needs therapy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing a joke about Republicans versus Democrats, you know, and you can't, it's really hard. It's really hard to be a comedian in these times.
Well, and I think, you know, again, it's like asking so much of everybody, but I do think this point of like, be on the side, be above the polarization, like let everyone else be mad at each other and blah, blah, blah.
But it's
and
then so you just, hard to,
you know, and I,
and now we have 4 more years.
Okay, but,
of
okay. So here's another one.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 2, limit the amount of anguish you take on. All right. So this I thought was probably true for
That's
me
a good one.
And like
That's
probably
a good one.
All of our listeners. Now, before you read, this is what she says. Before you read a story or share a reel, ask yourself, how will this help me or others? Is there something I can do about this or learn from this? And that she wrote, and I think this was about another journalist who kind of came to the realization, don't fool yourself into thinking that monitoring tragedy is by itself helping anyone. When I read that, that hit me so close to home because I was like, oh, me just scrolling through the news is fucking totally does nothing at all for fucking anyone.
Yeah.
That one made
me
feel things.
That is 100% true. That's always how I feel whenever there's like a plane crash or a flood or some sort of natural disaster. And it's just like that shiny object, not to diminish the tragedy that people are experiencing, but like that sort of shiny object shit that like CNN just obsesses over for 2 weeks straight. And it's like, there's nothing to be gained by watching it at all. And so I have learned to sort of wean myself off of that. Like,
But then there's that other side of it. You know, we have all these mass shootings and everyone is
tuned out.
It has no reaction. It's like, oh, okay, another one. You know, that's the downside of, you know, of that. But I agree with you.
I think that's another way of helping us all like kind of stay off of our phones. It's just like, does this literally do anything?
Right. It's like, how do you feel before you pick up that phone? And how do you feel after? Like, I always feel like, what the fuck did I, Like, I literally am like, what? You know, 40 minutes? Like,
I worry that I may have said this before on your podcast, so I apologize. But there was this kid when I was in elementary school that I would eat lunch with, you know, at the lunch table or whatever. And he would do this thing where he would take all the food on his tray and he would stir it into this big goulash, like a big mush, and then eat it. And then everyone, but he would do it kind of like, he would pretend he liked it, but it was really just a kind of a show he was putting on for the other kids. And everyone would be like, ew, ew. And he would always say, it's all going the same place. And that is how social media and the news feels now, where it's like, Twitter is like, hilarious, depressing, like somebody's dog died. My son graduated high school, October 7th. Yeah. And it's all just in this goulash that makes you feel everything and nothing at the same time.
Yeah.
So I need to know what that kid does now for a living.
He's a senator.
Can you please look it up?
He's a senator?
No, I'm just joking. I have no idea.
By the way, there was another, in this point, she made another really great metaphor that I just thought I'd share. She said, the news media covers a very narrow, distorted sliver of what is actually happening in the world. It's like trying to see your town through a peephole. You may glimpse something something important every so often, but it'll never be the full picture. So it's like also, you know, keep that in mind. So just like, again, this is just kind of reduce your news consumption generally is really what this amounts to. Number three is, if you see something good to do, do it and don't expect a big result. There's very few people that she writes, like the number of people who can depolarize a hyperpolarized country on their own is approximately 5, according to some careful calculations that she made, which I think is probably right. It's, you know, there's like a Mark Zuckerberg, a whoever and a whoever that can really like have that kind of like major, major global impact. But, you know, there's stuff that you can do that might have, you know, can have a minor effect, and don't expect it to be a real effect. Like if you're, you know, she gives us the example of like when you talk to your cousin who lives in a swing state but isn't planning on voting, share a story about why we vote, and then maybe they'll vote, maybe they won't vote. The thing I like to always talk about is figure out what's like shitty in your own community, the park, a left turn signal, whatever it is, and a pothole, and try and fix that. Those things are actually more gratifying and will have more of an impact on your day to day than like these large, you know, things that you have no real control over.
What about spending hours upon hours gazing into my own navel? Is that helping anything?
It's probably actually, I want to say, better.
I mean, if you saw my navel, you'd get it. Okay. It's a pretty fascinating navel.
She ends the piece talking about, you know, literally the stuff we do to ourselves, like by scrolling and doing all this stuff, is like spikes in cortisol. We just actually, there's actually physiological effects. So like, I don't know, check out this piece. Again, it's called How to Survive 2024 in Amanda Ripley's Substack. And I was just so moved by it. And it made me feel really good about having some basic rules going into 2024.
She's absolutely right, because I was just, you know, I was unfortunately watching the news and they said New Hampshire and the Iowa caucus. And I automatically got like, no, like I was like, I cannot go through this again.
I know. I also feel like, you know, having seen now my mom had a friend who was like very pro-Trump. And this time around, I think she's like tired of it. So she doesn't even mention it anymore. Interestingly, even people who were very pro-Trump, like just anecdotally from my own life, there's like two over here that I know of, and they're like just tired of it, even though they're pro-Trump, like maybe even still, but they're just not even bringing it up anymore, which I think is interesting because they used to bring it up all the time. So I don't know. People, it's good to be tired of it and then just to talk about Taylor Swift instead. All right, let us move on to topic number three. Okay, so apparently feet have become a big deal in recent years. There's a lot more censorship of feet on social media. If you post, you know, accidental naked feet in a photo, it might be taken down. I've actually been foot indifferent my entire life. That's an admission from me to you. And as a result, I've never even noticed foot imagery. Like, it's just not something that, you know, I see. Has this been on your radar? Have you noticed a change in foot awareness?
What is this?
I think there's a couple things at play here. I think one, memes become reality. And for a long time, in like the 2000s, in the aughts and in the 10s, the foot fetishes kind of became sort of a hack go-to joke. Like there was a lot of, like on 30 Rock, there were like a ton of foot fetish jokes, you know.
Jokes.
And not even hack, but I'm just saying it's like, it was sort of a go-to comedy reference for a long time. And I think a lot of times those things then become reality. You know what I mean? That, you know, WikiFeet, how many jokes have you heard about WikiFeet? Or, you know, Quentin Tarantino being obsessed with feet. You know, it just, it felt like I never heard about foot fetishes when I was in my 20s. But for whatever reason, the past 15 years, it became a big joke. And then I think that sort of filters down to young people, and then it stops being an ironic joke to them and it becomes a real thing, I think.
So Pornhub actually did a year in review. So this came from a Vice piece, by the way. So they're out there figuring out trends. And in 2023, Gen Z searched for foot-related content on the site more than any other generation. So there is something about having grown up with like references to feet or something.
Yeah.
Relative to other age groups, feet are 68% more popular among Gen Z. And according to Grindr, Gen Z is the least likely to have the feet tag on their profile because they're worried that their feet are constantly being sexualized.
Oh my God.
So Judy, talk to me about, I mean, don't you have a couple of Gen Z children?
Yeah. What is Gen Z is what year to what year? Oh, I think Henry is not and Ben is. I haven't discussed it with Ben, but I just find this so like weird. I mean, I don't know. It's a foot, you know. I just want to get a pedicure. As someone who was a runner, and my toenails would fall off all the time
because
you know, you long distance run. Like, I have never looked at feet as. It's like a way to get from one place to another. I don't understand.
I know.
It.
I don't understand either.
I really don't get it. I mean, I like getting a pedicure. I like getting my foot rubbed. You know, I don't believe in socks and Birkenstocks. I think that the whole foot should be showing in the Birkenstock. You know, like I used to wear sandals all the time. As you get older, your feet get kind of not as attractive. And you're like, oh, I'm not going to wear these shoes because my feet look like shit. So maybe because they're in a good foot period of their life, they are like, oh, I never noticed how hot your feet are. But just wait until you get hammer toes and corns and nails falling off. You know,
I also think there's something that I refer to as public domain personality quirks, which are like things that they've heard other people say that makes them seem interesting. And so they kind of adopt them as like, I could be interesting. Like for a long time, people would say like, oh, I can't stand the word panties, or I can't stand the word moist, or like, I'm afraid of clowns. And I would be like, are you really? Or is that just something you've heard other people say? And it seems like an easy way to make yourself feel interesting. And I kind of feel like that's what this feet thing is too. That it's sort of like they've heard other people say that, oh, I have a weird thing about feet. And it's like, well, I'm interesting. I also have an interesting thing about feet. And I question it sometimes. I think sometimes people try to up their own quirkiness. But, you know.
I'm looking at my feet right now because I'm barefoot. There's nothing interesting about my feet. Well, like, I don't get it.
Why do I have a boner, Judy?
Oh boy! Ding 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 ding
ding. So, just my final piece of data on this, because I just think it's hilarious that there is also data on this. Fun with Feet, a feet pick selling app, which I've never heard of, says that the 18 to 30 demographic represents the vast majority of their seller base. They say that 63% of their users are between 18 and 26. And per their data, quote, foot fetishes are growing exponentially year after year. So someone from that company actually wrote that sentence, that foot fetishes are growing exponentially year after year, which I think is hilarious and is a weird, I mean, it's like, I guess if you look at cultural trends or something, it's like we used to think men in pantaloons were hot or something, right? Like it stands to reason.
I actually never thought that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, it stands to reason that the different things are going to catch fire, right, like in different parts of a century. Bless everyone's heart.
Now that I'm sorry to be all filthy with boner talk and now what I'm about
Please.
To say, but now that like anal sex has stopped being this sort of verboten topic, like I True. Guess they need something else has to take its place as the sort of gross thing that nobody will talk about, I guess. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like something else needs to be fetishized when something sort of enters the realm of, if not respectability, then sort of commonality, you know. I don't know. I know this is going to a very weird direction. I apologize, but I was talking to like younger women. You know, I've been married for 409 years, and the younger women were just saying that that's just kind of just something that's part of the deal now. That when I was a kid, like when I was young, I was like, what? Like, I didn't even know anybody who'd ever heard of it. Like, it just kind of makes me wonder, as sexual practices and mores change, then other things have to sort of go into that taboo space.
Right, because we're not comfortable with nothing being taboo, I guess.
Yeah,
You know, like there always has to be something taboo that we're like working right. against, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so folks, I don't know. Let me know. Do you have a foot fetish? Does any of this make sense to you? Are you on fucking, what's it called? Fun with Feet, the best-selling foot pick app? Okay, let's
do you want to have anal with Christian?
Or do you
want
to
either?
I posted a joke
Calendar
about anal.
Is wide open.
I posted a joke about anal like a couple months ago or whatever, and it like immediately went viral, and I was like, oh, is it just because this is about anal?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's been about anal, and people are just like, yay. All right, let's quickly talk about biggest cultural moments of 2023. Did any of these resonate with you? So there was a list in the Independent, which is a UK publication, so a couple of them were about weird UK people that I was like,
yeah,
I don't know who you are. But the other ones I thought it was a nice place to look because it seemingly has a little bit more of a global bent. And one of them they brought up was like Rihanna at the Super Bowl, which feels like in the annals of history.
400 years ago.
Yeah.
400 years. Okay. Like I think like in 100 years, people will be like, oh, it's like Rihanna at the Super Bowl. I don't know. Do you feel like that one would stand the test of time?
I don't really.
I don't either.
No. It's funny.
I mean that, yeah.
You know, all three of us are VH1 clip show veterans. And, you know, I was on Best Week Ever for a long time. And I know you guys have done those shows. You know, I think you both have done Best Week Ever as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
I didn't do Best Week Ever, but I was in the clip show world.
Yeah. And it's just it's so funny that all of this stuff I used to just have to know. You know, and I used to sort of have to be vaguely aware of, like, I remember being at a bar once and looking up at the TV and it was on E and there was some scroll about Lindsay Lohan. And I had to, like, stop my conversation and because I was like, well, I'm going to be asked about this week, so I better pay attention right. to what's going on. And so now when I read these, you know, I feel like Morgan Freeman in Shawshank Redemption. Like, I'm just sort of like, yo, you young fellas, you know, the things you care about. Like, when I see these sort of cultural events that apparently meant something, I'm like, well, I'm officially out of circulation in terms of
were doing it because you were getting paid.
Right.
So otherwise you wouldn't have paid attention to it at all, you know?
Well, Judy, here's another one. Does this do anything for you? The coronation of King Charles.
You know, I was a big Lady Di fan.
Okay.
And I also love The Crown and everything. But
I'm currently watching it.
Oh, I'm almost done.
Yeah, I'm like two episodes away from being done.
Isn't it getting depressing? All right, whatever. we can discuss that off the air. But I was one of those people who, you know, I got up at like 3 a.m. to watch him marry Lady Di. I mean, I used to love that, and my mother did too. You know, it was just fun to watch and stuff. But yeah, I can't stand him, and yet, you know, and it doesn't really have any effect on me,
right?
But it was at this point, knowing what we know about the royal family, the fact that he's sitting there, like that there is a kid, like it's ridiculous. I don't know, you mean the whole enterprise? The whole enterprise, and that he stands there in the outfit, and it's
yeah, it's like whole, it's, it feels it's a little just, ridiculous. Yeah,
yeah, it. Yeah. Yeah, it's so over the top, and I get it, and you know, there's people that are, but it's like, come on, people.
They should have just like rented a conference room at the Hilton. You know what I mean? Throw on a nice and visor.
Have somebody do a tight 15 up top, and then
exactly warm up the crowd.
And also, how long is he going to be king? No one wants him to be king.
Well, until death does him part from it.
Right, I know.
The only part of that that will last with me at all is just those close-ups of his disgusting sausage fingers.
Oh my God, I know!
That, okay, the way Gen Z feels about feet is how I feel about King Charles' fingers.
Okay.
They're disgusting.
Christian, this is your opportunity to launch an app and become a millionaire.
Yeah.
Wiki fingers?
Okay, so here's two things. That I'm gonna close on this. There's two things that I do feel really define 2023. Do you agree with me? It is Barbenheimer and Twitter imploding. Do you feel like those are kind of like
culturally absolutely.
The big things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so.
And I mean, I'm going to remember Barbenheimer forever because that was crazy.
It was crazy.
And it felt very organic. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like it felt very people powered. It felt like it didn't feel corporate. It felt like a, kind of a joke that everyone just kind of got in on and had a great time with. You know?
Right, exactly. A joke that we could kind of unironically enjoy, oddly. Like we all kind of unironically enjoyed this thing that was ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't have
those opportunities to have like monoculture moments and sort of mass culture participation. And so, yeah, it felt like a fun thing that everyone could enjoy and not have it be polarizing.
Yeah.
And then also, I mean, with the Twitter thing, I had a lot of followers and I know a lot of people. I met a lot of people on Twitter and became fans of theirs. And, you know, we would podcast together and yet he fucking ruined it.
He ruined
the whole thing. I mean, Trump had ruined it. And now it's like a bar rescue episode about it. Yeah.
You know, when he comes in and takes some place and makes it just corny, you know, and it's like the lamest person, you know, who never gets invited to the parties buys the bar where all the parties take place.
And it's going to be like, and I'm going to ruin it for all of you. Yeah. You know, he's just.
Now I'm Mr. Popularity.
Right. Wait, did you guys delete your accounts or no?
No, I can't.
I don't even look at it.
It's the only social media app that I ever invested any time or emotion in. I've never been a picture guy, so I never got into Instagram. Yeah. I don't do TikTok. I don't do any of that shit.
I
feel fucking trapped.
I like Threads, but it was people really worked hard to get Twitter followers.
Yeah, yeah. And I like lists and stuff. Yeah. Like I'm a huge basketball fan, and so it's like that's why I've never been a Royals guy.
It feels like not at all like a news source anymore. Like if you were to have your basketball list, it seems like everything that would come up is inaccurate and weird.
Well, I literally like I have curated lists of like specific people, you know, but that's all I really use it for at this point. Like I certainly don't use it to try to further my career, God forbid.
I used to look at it just to be like, what's the chatter?
Right. But it's also you felt like you could interact with, you know, these people that you would never be able to interact with.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I thought that was.
So that feels like very big for 2023. Okay, folks, that is the end of the show. My God, what a wonderful way to start the year with the two of you. I'm so happy we got to do this together. And I want for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you in 2024 and all the wonderful things that you do. Judy Gold, where do they do that?
Well, I am on all the socials at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, because I'm Jewish. Not a great time for us, but... That's and judygold.com regular, JUDYGOLD.com is my website. And can I just plug a couple dates?
Yeah, absolutely.
January 12th, City Winery, New York. January 13th, City Winery, Philly. January 19 and 20, Off Cabot, which is in Beverly, Massachusetts.
Beverly, Massachusetts.
And yeah, just I've got a lot of dates coming up and I'm tired. I'm a tired woman, and I just have my knee replaced.
Folks, okay. Go see Judy Gold in New York, in Philly, in Beverly, Massachusetts. There's going to be more and more opportunities. This woman performs everywhere in America, and it is a wonderful, wonderful time. Christian Finnegan, where can people find you?
Well, I am still slugging it out on Twitter. Well, I'm on all the socials at Christ Finnegan, ChristFinnegan, sort of a companion to JEWDY.
Yes, that's perfect. Judy and Christ. Yeah.
And I have a newsletter called New Music for Olds where I
can't wait to read that.
Expose people to new stuff that I've been enjoying in my musical travails. That is newmusicforolds.substack.com. And I have 5 albums on iTunes, and you can Google me. You'll find stuff.
Oh, folks, and definitely do it, because again, as someone who's been able to see both of these people live and Christian live, it's such a fun time to watch him perform. So definitely avail yourself of the opportunities. And as for me, I'm going to be here and there throughout the year, but I'm not specifically sure of any of it yet. So I will, as you know, announce all my dates on this show. Again, if you haven't read my piece on going to a mushroom retreat in Jamaica and tripping balls, you can do that on Afar magazine. It would mean a lot to me if you check that out, actually. It's like a long read. It's a meaty read. And I expose a lot. And what I really would like to do is thank everyone who makes this show a possibility. That's our wonderful, wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making this show a possibility. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme music. If you have any questions or concerns or ideas, you can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And again, don't forget to support us at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And otherwise, Happy New Year. We'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.